Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey folks, this is episode number 199. One more episode until our big, hey, we might have something fun for you. We may not. You don't know yet. Episode. But in the meantime, as we all know, last week, Neil Peart from Rush passed away. So we're going to talk a little bit about Rush today. And we have Bill's good friend here, Doug Sabotin. He is a bigger Rush fan than I am, so he probably knows a little more about this than we do. Or at least me.
Good evening,
Bill.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
Doing great.
You said the word gentlemen.
Gentlemen. Do you ever watch this show?
I was talking to Dennis and Alan, not Bill.
You don't have a clue.
Look at that, Dennis. You got called a gentleman instead of something
else. There
you
go. For change.
Bullshit. Yeah, that's how that works. Yeah, Doug and I, just a little background. We've been friends since we took a little trip. Our first real experience as co-workers was on a trip to New Orleans during Mardi Gras. That pretty much bonds you for life. So let's go with that and leave it there and move forward.
That's probably enough said there, Bill.
Yeah. What happens in New Orleans stays in New Orleans?
Yeah, and that was that 2004?
Sometime in the early 2000s, I think.
It's like January. It was like February
right,
2004.
Right, right.
Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, and we've worked together ever since at the place we work. So there you go. Cool. The only thing I want to talk about real quickly is when I was AHRA president this year, I found this out this evening that as president, when I was giving my presentations and stuff like that, I kind of gave out some guitar picks. I had custom made guitar picks that I took, and you guys have seen them. I gave them to you guys, but I gave out one of these picks to a guy that is the publisher of a magazine. Yeah, there you go. Looks
there
like
it is.
And he's a publisher of a magazine called Ice Magazine, and they do imaging. It's an imaging conference kind of thing. And he kept my pick, and apparently he listened to the show, and then contacted a guy to write an article about called Off the Clock. And if you go to our Facebook page, you will find a link to the article if you want to read about it. But it's about being at work and then the stuff after hours and how the podcast got started. And it's a really cool article. I'm not bragging about the article because I'm in it. I'm bragging because the article is really good. It does a really good job of talking about the podcast and those other two knucklehead friends of mine that we get to do this every week, which is a privilege. And it was cool. It gave me goosebumps when I read it. And it's a pretty cool thing. So
we should be proud. And I can tell that Bill is a Gene Simmons fan because he calls us knucklehead all the time.
No, and I'm proud of Bill, and like I said, and what it says about the show is really cool. But you know, it is about Bill too. I mean, if it wasn't for Bill, we wouldn't have that article. So, congratulations, dude. It's really cool.
Thanks, Hannah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's cool. So anyway,
you got any records?
Yeah, I got one real quick. Just throw this out real quick. I did buy this from the people from the guy does record sales on that record site or whatever it is. I've had the flu.
You narrowed that down.
No, I've had the flu this week, so just you got to bear with me. The was it the Tri-State Record thing on the internet, Facebook? Anyway,
are you talking about the live auction thing?
No, it wasn't a live auction. It was just the record people. Anyway,
I don't know.
Guy had it up for sale. Anyway, I got Fraley's Live Plus one. So this is actually an original one. This is not the one on the record date, but I did get a copy of that. It's very, very nice.
How much did you pay for that?
I paid $20 with shipping. So it is what it is.
Including shipping?
So, yes, including shipping.
Oh, that's not bad.
So I didn't think it was too bad. No. But that's for original, and it is really good shape. One thing I did have to mention, though, to stack on again to the 2020 stuff that's coming around this summer, Bon Jovi and Bryan Adams are going out on tour.
I just saw that, and I'm trying to figure out how to get to Chicago.
You know what? I have not seen Bon Jovi, and I've not seen Bryan Adams. So, you know what? I'm going to go do that. And now the one also this week, the one that I'm real excited about, is the Foreigner, Kansas,
and Europe.
Man, I tell you what, it's going to be a bang-up summer.
Yeah, I've not seen Europe, so I'm really excited you know, and there are a lot of shows coming to Ruoff this summer, and I bought that $199 season pass.
You got a deal,
I have already gotten my money's worth, because there's Jimmy Buffett, Alanis Morissette, the Doobie Brothers, the Foreigner thing. I just saw today that Rammstein is touring the U.S. in 2020. I doubt they'll go to Ruoff, but if they do, by golly, I'm gonna be in that audience too.
You know, I don't know. I know a little bit of their music, but I want to see the show. Their show is
heard,
like
if you've heard one of their songs,
I know
you've heard
it's
them
prog
all,
rock.
But it's the show. You know, it's the spectacle. You know, being the Kiss fans that we are, the fire and the blowing shit up and the chainsaws, the buzz saws, and you know.
And I'm sure, and I have to give a shout out. Our friend Peter Cicery is probably in seventh heaven, because the darkness is coming to town and or to the States, and he's already got his tickets ready for that. So he's the big darkness fan.
That's a whole family thing going on there.
So they're all thrilled. No, this is going to be a good year for concerts, and I hope. Unfortunately, everyone that's really good that's coming around is a weekday concert for me, and I'm just going to have to hit what I can. The Foreigner one, though, is a Saturday night one, so I'm going to try to hit that.
Yeah, the two Saturdays before that's the Jimmy Buffett, so I've already told Ian, get ready, because you're my hotel this summer.
So it's going to be good, because I have not seen this version of Foreigner with all those guys that's in it now. And I haven't seen Kansas since 1993, probably. I've never seen Europe. Kansas is a good show. That's a good show. Yeah. So anyway,
Bill, have you ever seen Europe?
I don't think so. Claim I don't know if they opened. They might have opened this for somebody that I saw back in the day, but I don't remember.
Claim to fame for them from concerts I've been to over the years. In August of 88, I saw Def Leppard at the State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis. Europe opened for them. In all the concerts that I've gone to in my entire life, they're the only live show that I've seen, Europe was, who opened with the Final Countdown and closed with the same song. So in a six or seven song set, they played the same song twice. So I wonder if they still do that.
They When Quiet Riot first got their start, they had the same problem. They didn't They didn't have enough songs, so they did Mental Health and Come On, Feel the Noise twice.
Wow. So I'm looking forward to that, too. And there's, like, some band's 25th anniversary this year.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Who is that? What's that? What are they called? The Poo Haters? Foo Fighters. That's it.
Yeah. I'm not even going to talk about that till they finally come out to what they're doing, but you know it's going to be fucking spectacular. So I'm looking forward to whatever comes out. I'm looking forward to some new music, looking forward to a tour. I'm sure they're going to have all kinds of cool stuff coming on. So
I'm sure they will.
And
just so, for
it's,
you.
It's the Foo Farters.
The Foo Farters.
We like to give them hell about the Foo Fighters. Yeah.
Well, they never just because never let me down, so let's just go with that. So.
But they let you down when they didn't play in Lexington.
Yeah, they did. They let me down. I was like, what? Damn.
Sometimes shit happens, but I did. I made up for that. I got to Nashville. So.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. What's the topic today?
Well, it's not a nice one. It is a nice one. We're going to reminisce. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question for you then. So is there, do you guys think that, well, I'm assuming that Neil knew, but whenever he decided not to start playing anymore and retire, that he had brain cancer. Do you guys believe that's probably true?
Yes. That's timing wise. I'm sure, because somebody mentioned on the internet the other day that, okay, they said he's dealt this with the 3.5 years, and then the time that they were off, blah, 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 they had, you know, already said they were going to retire before that. I think he probably knew. I mean, this just for me, and I told you guys this the other day, if that's the fact, if he knew and they all knew, this whole time where they've been going through, you know, the ending of this thing, and then after the fact of going, you know, we're not going to tour anymore, and, you know, and fans are clamoring, you know, when are you going to come back out, when you, and they're like, well, we're just not going to do it again, not going to do it again. That took tremendous, you know, everything to them guys to be able to not say nothing, to keep that personal, because Neil was such a personal right. person. Either that had to be just tough for all three of those people, the whole group, you know, themselves. And, you know, thoughts out to all those guys, because, you know, I mean, like I said, Neil wanted, he always wanted to have his own thing. And, you know, after reading, I really didn't understand why he was such a introvert. And then after reading Ghost Rider, you know, learning about, and this is way before the documentaries where you learn about this, but, you know, his daughter getting killed, his wife dying of cancer, you know, he went through stuff that would basically just tear the soul out of somebody. And to continue on doing what he was doing and playing at the professional level that he was doing, and it's just amazing, you know. And that's why he wanted, and he, being a motorcyclist too, he got into that, you know, when the band would travel, he would carry his bike along, and, you know, from tour or from place to place, you know, they getting in and would be riding the bus. He'd get on his motorcycle, and there was a guy that went with him, one of the roadies and stuff, that was a motorcyclist also, that went with him a lot too. But he traveled by bike from venue to venue, and that's the way he kept his head clear, you know. And he was just a, he was a, you know, he was a special person. And like I said, if this is something that they had to deal with through this whole end of the tour, plus at the end of the situation, you know, God love them all, you know. So, all cool. I got to say about that. But anyway, but I, you know, he left us a plethora of great stuff, a lot of great videos, a lot of great stuff. I do have one thing to say though: these people on Facebook who have been selling these T-shirts the day after he passed away, with all this stuff about Neil Peart and all this stuff, and they've been all—I mean, I have been on there basically ramming those people. I mean. And it's funny, not just me, but everybody, the comments on these sections are like going, you guys are a bunch of vultures. I've actually turned a bunch of them into Facebook, and actually they've got a couple of them taken down. And Rush is actually, I saw an actual official thing. Rush is actually going after those people too, and trying to get them taken down, because, you know, they're not doing anything for cancer research or anything. They're just selling it because of, they're trying to make money on Neil's name. So anyway,
bastards.
Done with that. Let's not talk good. About. Let's talk about Rush, how great they were, and Neil, how great he was. So, I'm done complaining.
Well, I don't think you were complaining. That's a very valid thing, man. It's good that you did that. I think most people don't bother taking the time to do that. So, kudos to you, man.
You know, is this one of those things where you know,
can tell you're sick? Last time you wouldn't have done that.
I've been home all day, and I'm just bitchy. I mean, everything. No, like I said, Rush was my first concert I went to, and it was Halloween night, 1981. Halloween night, I went to see at Robert Stadium. I saw Rush and their Signals tour. Roy Gallagher opened. It was an amazing night. I was a Rush fan. My best friend Matt DeVille was a huge Rush fan. We were both Kiss fans, and then he kind of went off the Kiss train onto Rush. And then I had another friend of mine who I played in a band with, and he was a big Rush fan. So, of course, you know, in our high school band, we were always trying to play La Ville Strangliano, or if I said it right. But I mean, By Tour and the Snow Dog, and we were working, man. We did our best trying to do those songs, but, you know, some of 2112, which we could. And, but yeah, it was one of those things where I grew up, and then over time, I got to where I was a bigger Rush fan. But yeah, that was my first concert, was seeing Rush.
Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Doug, you got a pretty interesting story about how you got introduced, don't you?
Yeah. Not sure how old you gentlemen are. I think Bill and I are about the same age. Cut my teeth on Kiss in the mid to late 70s. And then buddies of mine and I, I think we were 6th, 7th grade, 77, 78. in between sixth and seventh grade, throughout the summer, we hung out. You know, we had a band of brothers, six, seven of us that would hang out and try not to get into too much trouble, but we got in a little bit. Anyway, a buddy of mine, his name was Scott, was kind of the ringleader, and we would all go over to his house around lunchtime and raid his fridge and all kinds of things. And one day we were hanging out, and he pulled out an album, and it was 2112. Put it on his turntable, start playing it. We start listening to it. One thing leads to another. Another buddy of mine, Jimmy, said, "Hey, you know what we ought to do? We ought to put an air band together." And because, man, those drums are something special. So Jimmy and Scott, a couple of other buddies of mine, put together this air band the summer between our sixth and seventh grade year, and basically wore out 2112, listening to it probably 50, 60, 70 times over the course of that summer. As that summer came to an end, I was introduced to A Farewell to Kings, which is actually one of my favorite Rush albums. And we spent the next 2 to 3 years together listening to that music. And I just remember that the memory of doing that sticks with me today like it was yesterday. I can still see Jimmy sitting on Scott's chair playing those air drums like it was nobody's business. And you know, I think thinking about that time in our lives and how special those moments are and how few and far between they are. This past week has been particularly difficult for me, just thinking about how we transition for something that's so iconic. You know, I've been reflecting since Bill asked me to do, to be on your show. You know, I've tried to think about, you know, maybe there are a handful of bands that you say, you know what, there really was never any band that was quite like Rush. I don't know that we can say that about very many bands. They're definitely one of them, and we're going to miss Neil, and, you know, I don't know, there's been some talk of Geddy and Alex doing some stuff together, but I don't know that it'll be the same. But it's, you know, definitely a reflective time. Taking me back to sixth grade is pretty cool. That's pretty special.
Did the air band go on tour? Did they do any tours? Like
if memory
was
serves.
Was it an air tour?
If memory serves, there was a... Next, he lived in an apartment, and it was an apartment building, not a townhouse. And there were a couple of people in that building that were girls that hung out with us as well. And they came over, and I think we actually did put on a show or two for them, although we didn't charge much for it. But it's good times for sure.
So you're saying you had groupies at like sixth grade? Way to go, Stud Muffin.
And we didn't we didn't sing, and we didn't play any instruments. So yeah,
it's better than my band did.
Yeah, people show up, Dennis.
We ran people off. Cops came to our place a couple times, but
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, to your. To your point, my first show was actually August of 1977. I was privileged and blessed to see Frampton Comes Alive at Market Square Arena. It was an amazing concert. That was my first show. Saw a couple in between, but the one that I went to as well was the Signals Tour. It was November of 1982, right after I got my driver's license. And I was hooked after that. I mean, I think it was a little older. I don't know about you guys, but you get a little older and you can appreciate some of the thoughtfulness of the music a little bit more. You know, Subdivisions, New World Man, a couple of those songs are really, really great songs and a great album.
Yeah, that was our senior year, Halloween of our senior year. And there was five of us went down to that show. I think we paid like, was it $10.50? I think
that was. Was yours general admission? Ours was
general. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Back then, all that was general admission.
Yeah. And, it might have been $10, maybe. Imagine that today. Yeah. $10 doesn't even get you a beer.
No, that's terrible.
I remember my first concert was in 1987, and I paid $15.50 for my ticket. And my aunt had seen Kiss. Like 10 years or 11 years prior to that, and she was just appalled that I paid $15.50 for a ticket, because when she went, it was $7.50 for a ticket.
I think when I went the first time, it was like $6.50, because it was in 78, so I think that was about what they were when I've seen other ticket stubs. I don't have mine anymore. God only knows where they're at. So
I seen No, like I said, I seen them again then in the Time Machine tour in Nashville at Bridgestone. And I don't even remember what I paid for those. They were a lot more than $10.50 a ticket. So I actually got to see them twice. And then, but that was nice on that Time Machine because you got to see they played Moving Pictures in its entirety, which that was in itself an incredible thing to see. You know, there were some songs on there that I have always wanted to see play live, and that was a cool album to see played in its entirety. But that's only two times that I got to see them in concert.
I never saw them. Did you ever see them, Alan, either?
No,
I never saw. I mean, I've never been a. I like the singles. Right. If you go to like iTunes and YouTube or Spotify and you know the Play the Rush list, then that list they typically play on there, that's the Rush stuff I know.
Right.
You know, the Tom Sawyer, New World Man, all that kind of stuff. But I do have one Rush record. It wasn't a band that I thought I couldn't sit and listen to their music for a long period of time. It is sit in through 3 hours because I know their shows were marathons.
Sure.
You know, I just like, I don't think I could do that. I think I'd probably want to jab my, you know, straw into my neck or something like that. But it isn't because I totally respect the music. I mean, phenomenal players. I posted multiple times. I believe this to, you know, I think Neil Peart is probably the best drummer that ever lived. And, you know, just amazing, absolutely. So I can definitely respect the musicianship. Just the music for me, I just wasn't into it that much. But I've been listening to it last couple of days. I listened to that Essentials thing from on iTunes, and there's some really good stuff on there. And I listened the day after Neil passed. I listened to Permanent Waves. Cause that's the only record I have, and just. Phenomenal record. It's a phenomenal record. I mean, there's what, six songs on the damn thing, and it's you know, it lasts 40 minutes, but it's still a great record. So that's really my extent of Rush, because again, good stuff. I mean, I love it, but it just, I love the single stuff. I'm just not sure I'd enjoy a whole show.
Well, you know, Bill, pretty much I can just say ditto to what you said, because I'm the same way. One thing that pissed me off at the time, but when I was a very young drummer, somebody said something to me about Rush, and I was like, oh, I don't like Rush. How can you be a drummer and not like Rush? I'm like, hey, I can respect the dude, you know, for being the phenomenal drummer he is, but that doesn't mean I have to like him. You know? But, you know, you were talking about playing the Essentials or whatever. Yes, yesterday I finally got around to going through all of the singles and stuff, because that's about all I know of Rush. And when I narrowed it down, there, if you include Tom Sawyer, there are 13 Rush songs that I know well enough to say I like those songs. You know, and I'm going to do one of my radio shows is going to be a tribute to Rush. So I'm playing my top 10 Rush songs. So I knew I was not going to put Tom Sawyer in that top 10. But I had to knock two more off of there, so that was kind of interesting going through that yesterday. Do you guys want to maybe list your top three Rush songs?
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Bill's like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I got us right here, man.
I didn't know we had lists going. Damn it!
No. Well, come on.
I just popped it off the top of my head, dude.
Oh, I got you.
So why don't we let our esteemed guest go first?
Well, I was hoping you would save the guest for last.
Okay, well, we can do that.
I will go ahead and do...
No pun intended, but you guys missed that part. So.
Well, my top three are number three, Closer to the Heart, number two, Fly By Night, and number one, New World Man. And New World Man was actually my introduction to Rush because... back in 1982, my mom and dad got me one of those compilation cassettes for my birthday, and I don't remember any of the other stuff that was on that tape except that one song. And I really would like to find that, you know, find a list of that compilation tape somewhere on the internet just to see what the other songs were that were on there.
Yeah, I'll go, and then we can get to the serious people.
See that? Bingo.
So my favorite song by far is Spirit of the Radio. I mean, I just that track that's one of those things you get on and you got to turn that up, and
it, barely missed my top three with that.
Oh no, that's number one. The other one is the same is Free Will, which is off the Permanent Waves record. That's my favorite record, and then Tom Sawyer. And I know those are the singles and those are the songs that everybody knows, but to me those are the songs that when they you hear the first note, you know right. First or second note, you're there and you're down there. It's not like some other songs you're like, oh, what is that? Oh, okay. But that's it for me. I mean, it's ironic. It's off two records, you know, just three songs off two records. There's not a lot of space there. And I don't know. Can you guys tell me? So did Tom Sawyer's on Permanent on Moving Pictures,
Moving
correct?
Pictures, right. Yes.
So how far did it come out before Spirit of the Radio? Was it a long time?
One year.
Yeah, Permanent Waves was 80.
Moving Pictures was 81.
81.
So yeah. Permanent Waves was, well, actually Spirit Radio was really one of the first radio hits that they had that was under 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It was an actual radio hit. And then once that hit, then, you know, Tom Sawyer was your next, you know, up that was radio edit wise, you know, that could make it on the radio. Yeah,
and Dennis, you probably know it, Dennis, right? You probably know a lot about the history of this as well. But "Working Man" was actually the first single. It was promoted by DJ in Cleveland.
You're right.
But that would have been 75 and
74. Yeah.
Their producer said this was a great song, but
you got to
come out with something better. And they basically said we're going to do whatever we want. No. And then brought, 2112, Farewell to Kings. I think Hemispheres maybe was in there, and then kept it Permanent Waves. And Bill, to your point, Permanent Waves, Moving Pictures, and Signals, which had Subdivisions, New World, were all within 3 to 4 years. And
well,
they were all
about 80. Well, it was 81, 80. Well, actually, Permanent Waves is 80, Moving Pictures is 81, and Exit Stage Left was also put out in 81, and then Signals was 82. And then Grace Under Pressure came out in 84. And in 85, Power Windows came out. They lost me at Grace Under Pressure.
Yeah.
To be honest, I kind of checked out at that point. To be honest, I mean, I've got some of their records up through here. But honestly, I love everything Signals and Down.
So Grace Under Pressure is your Kiss Unmasked.
Basically, it got to be the point where the keyboards got to be way, way too much for me. I mean, Signals was, I mean, Moving Pictures started that. Signals got, it was still bearable. Grace Under Pressure and then Power Windows, it just got to be the point where they kind of lost my interest at that point. They got kind of buried, you know, with all the other music coming in and everything. Like I said, I continue to be a fan. And would go see them if they came around. But I know when this last, the R40 came out, this last DVD, it was a double DVD, and me and Rod listened to it. And the first half of it was all this stuff from like Clockwork Angels and Snakes and Arrows and all this stuff. And I didn't know any of these songs. I mean, we sat there for half an hour going, I looked at him, I go, do you know this song? I go, no, I don't know the song. But it was still good to watch, and we enjoyed watching it. But yeah, I am a huge, you take me from the first Rush album all the way through Signals. I love all those albums. But once after that, it's not that I don't like those albums. I just there's a few songs here and there that I'll listen to. But that, that's it as far as that's concerned. So anyway, are we going to one of my songs? Holy shit. Let's see. I would have to say, I like stuff like on, say, like Moving Pictures. I like Camera's Eye, Witch Hunt, Vital Signs. I like the odd stuff. I've always been kind of like that. Hemispheres. I like Circumstance. Cygnus X1. I like that. Xanadu, you know, just good Lord, you know, any of the old stuff, just throw it out there.
Yeah, for me, I was kind of anticipating you guys would maybe ask top three, top five. Right. I'm a little bit more of a Rush freak than maybe the three of you. I kind of followed them through the 80s a little more, and especially into the early 90s. I was going through a tough time in my life, and Roll the Bones was came out in 91, and I think they may have had a couple of hits off of that album. So what I did, yeah, if it's okay with you guys, I had two to three per decade. So 70s, 80s, 90s, and then after the 2000s.
Fire so 70s,
sure.
70s, I go off 2112. The song Twilight Zone is a really, really, and I'm more of an obscure Rush than the mainstream stuff as well. Farewell to Kings, the song, the title track off that album, A Farewell to Kings. Not only is one of my favorites, but in my opinion, Alex's best guitar solo is about 3 minutes into that song. So if you want to mark right down, if you want to hear just a wicked guitar solo as it relates to a Rush song, A Farewell to Kings is one to listen to for sure. Cinderella Man, love that song. And then, Bill, that's to your point, Spirit of the Radio, Free Will from Permanent Waves. Spirit of the Radio, also claim to fame. For those of you who YouTube out there, and if you guys haven't seen this already, they did an intro where they were doing a parody on themselves. They're in a sausage restaurant, and they're all dressed up like different characters. And Dennis, I don't know, maybe you've seen that
before. Yeah, I've seen it.
Bill Allen, you've got to look that up and watch that, because it's really hilarious. It's a Spirit of the Radio.
Time machine. It's a time machine, isn't it, where they have the time machine?
Yeah. Time machine.
That's it.
But the song is Spirit of the Radio that they're making a parody on, and it's pretty good. Into the 80s, again, off Moving Pictures. I love, if you got a convertible or a sports car and you're driving 60, 70, 75 miles on the interstate at night, you got to put on Red Barchetta. That is a classic song, and really a great song to drive to. Off Signals, New World Man, and Subdivision. And then moving into the 90s, off the Roll of Bones, I love the song Ghost of a Chance. It's really, the harmonics on Alex's guitar are amazing, really paying attention to that kind of stuff. And then I'm with you, Dennis, into the 2000s, I got kind of lost. But a couple songs to mark that you would want to listen to if you haven't heard before. One of them is really, actually both of them are pretty strong. I would consider them rock songs. One of them is called A Far Cry from Snakes and Arrows. And the other one is called Caravan off Clockwork Angels.
Oh, so I had bought Clockwork Angels. For some reason, I had got it, and I remember that song, Caravan.
Those are great songs. Yeah, great songs.
Yeah, I agree. Good deal. Yeah, actually, Caravan was one of those ones, whenever it first came out, I was like, yes, they're back.
They're back.
And I bought this album, and it was kind of like, okay, it's a good song, but it was a good start. It got me to buy the album, though. You know what I'm saying? And but yeah, every once in a while they threw out a good one like that. But no,
it's kind of funny how bands do that, right? Do you think it's because they just get so in their head and they just have this direction that they want to go down this path, and they just lose their shit, and there's nobody standing around telling them? Well, there probably are. There probably are people standing around telling them, this is not what you normally do, and it's not going to work. And they go, I don't give a shit. This is what I want to do, and I'm making this record, and we're going to put it out because we have a contract, and that's the record.
I can see that.
Kiss did that. I think a lot of bands do that. It's just amazing how far off the reservation they get. And then, so not being a Rush fan, the question, did they get back on the reservation, or is it on a record, or did they not get back on the reservation until they started going back and playing all of 2112 or all of it shows? Is that when it kind of got back together? I mean, I don't know what the right word is, but
live wise, they've always been, I mean, they'll go back and play the hits and stuff. They're ones that don't go back and play their hits. But as far as their new material come out, they never really come back out and got that stuff again. I know if you watch a lot of their documentaries and stuff, I mean, Geddy was big on the keyboard stuff. And, you know, Alex, well, he said, you know, he's flat out said in all these interviews and all these DVDs that, you know, it's like at that time I was pissed because, you know, he didn't want all these keyboards. You know, he wanted that. He didn't mind the pedals and everything else. But, you know, they're after signals. You know, Getty was hit. The layered keyboards was really bad at that point, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't think Alex was real happy at that point. You know, Alex, throughout the years, you could tell in some of the songs was getting his guitar licks back, but it never really got back to that bite. But there again, they've never been a guitar driven band. You know, it's a weird, Rush is a weird band to try to peg down. You know, they're not a hard rock band. They've never been a hard rock band. Mm-hmm. And so did they get back to what they, you get back to your question, Bill, did they get back to what they were? No. But they never was a rock band in the very beginning. They were always something different. So, and they kind of moved through time and changed through time. But one thing that they didn't forget is when they do their concerts, they do play the old stuff mixed in with the newer stuff. And, you know, and I think over the years, as time they got to the point toward the end, they knew what people wanted to hear. You know, they weren't stupid. You know, they were playing more of the older stuff. Throwing some of the better stuff that they played through the years, you know, kind of salted in there.
So, Doug, when did you see them last? Then did you see them on the last tour?
No, it would have been with Dennis, the Time Machine tour. I saw them in Chicago. There's an amphitheater right by Soldier Field, and I don't know what the name of it is. But yeah, they played Moving Pictures from start to finish. That was the last time I saw mm-hmm. them. I've seen them 5 times, 3 of those 5 times in the last 15 years. And every time you've seen them, it's an evening with Rush. So it's a 3 to 3.5 hour show. And you just realize that unless you are a diehard, buy every album, listen to every song on every album, half of the stuff you're not really going to know very well. And that's just, yeah, what they do. To your point about, you know, the reservation, to me, I don't know that they cared a whole lot about what other people thought. They just did what they felt like they wanted to do, and it resonated with a lot of people. And it's interesting to see them evolve over, I don't know how many years. Well, 40, right? Through our 40. So yeah.
I'm glad that they had that last tour though on DVD. I had a friend of mine who got to see that, and he said it was really neat to watch them. You know, they had the big everything going on, you know, all the amps and all this stuff, and then they just kept moving smaller and smaller and smaller down to that last song, and then they're down to like what they were in the gym. You know, they had like the two little amps and the little bitty amp, you know, the drum set, and he said it was a really neat way that the concert ended like that. And if you get a chance to see the DVD, that's kind of way that ends also. And but anyway, no, it's one of those things where, I mean, it's, you know, and thank God, you know, go out on top, be done with it, you know, leave the people with, you know, great memories of playing at your best. And that's what they did. You know, some other bands should probably take note of that.
Or individual artists.
Individual artists. There you go. Yeah.
So I've seen Beyond the Lighted Stage, which was, I was amazed. I mean, I really was. I mean, it just, because I like that. I kind of dig that stuff. The you know, autobiographical kind of things and the documentaries, that to me is really cool. But I was amazed even watching that. I mean, so I am a Rush fan. I'm just not like off the charts. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, because Doug and I talked about it, I think, about maybe going to that show. And I'm like, dude, I'm not sitting there for 3.5 hours. I know like an hour's worth of music. And after that, I'm like, oh, what the hell's going on? But I can appreciate, like I said, I can appreciate people that are, that do like it. And I can appreciate the, you know, the musicianship for sure. So interesting. I saw this thing, I was looking for it, so I wasn't like totally ignoring you guys. There's a video of these guys called Andy and Alex. It's on YouTube, and supposedly it's their first time reaction. And you've seen those videos?
I saw that yesterday. Yeah.
That these two young guys listening to Spirit of the Radio for the first time. And it's just, their reaction is just, I assume it was the first time, who knows, but it's really cool. And it really, to me, I watched it and I was like, I was excited watching it. I was like, waiting for the reaction, knowing the next notes that were coming and stuff like that. And it's really cool. So if you get a chance to check it out, it's the Spirit of the Radio. It's called, it's by, Andy and Alex. So it's just them getting to hear Rush for the first time. So
yeah, it's pretty cool. I saw that. I find it hard to believe that nobody's heard that, but I mean, I guess maybe, you know, who knows?
Bad parenting,
I guess. That's true. That could be true. But yeah, I did
good watch parenting and bad parenting. That's bad parenting. If you haven't at least heard that song, it's bad parenting.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Anyway, Doug's poor kids have heard all of them.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you would say that, because one of my bucket lists, I have a son who's 26 and a son who's now 16. And I really wanted him to experience, both of them to experience Rush, and was waiting till my youngest son got old enough to what I believe was appreciated, instead of just seeing it as a, you know, 3 hour, 3.5 hour. And unfortunately, they stopped touring and we never got a chance to do that. So yeah, if you get a chance to go to shows like what we're talking about earlier, Bon Jovi, or I mean, you got to do it. You got to go.
Do it.
Yep. 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 Cause you never know.
Wow. Yeah. We've done that
with Tom Petty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's retiring. That's no big deal. Oh no, he's retiring and he's going to die within the next like 6 weeks. So that didn't work out. That didn't work out at all. That's the reason I went to see Ozzy that summer.
Yeah.
That next summer, I was like, Ozzy's coming. I'm going, because that dude is going to, well, him or Keith Richards, one of the two. I don't know. They're both going to last forever. Apparently, alcohol and drugs works. It's a good preservation tool.
Yes.
At least at some point. But, yeah. So what else you got? Anything else about Rush?
Myself? No, right. just sad. And like I said, we're going to continue to listen. And I just got actually a copy of 2112 here a couple weeks ago, so I'm putting it on here.
All right, I got a question for you then. Mm-hmm. If our listeners or watchers had to buy one Rush record, what should they buy? They can only buy one.
Buy one.
Rush Greatest Hits from 1975.
Fuck, that's not bullshit.
Extra stage left.
There we go.
If you had to buy one, I would
only one.
I would say Moving Pictures. That's a pretty fair. I mean, that's a great album all the way through, and it's not too highly technical. It's not too way deep like some of the earlier stuff. It's perfect. It's right in the middle. It's kind of I don't know. I would say Moving Pictures.
Yeah, I'm with Dennis. I think thinking about that. I think they had 19. Is it, Dennis, that right? 19 studio albums?
Or probably, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the earlier stuff, I mean, they're going to get caught up in the Xanadu and all that stuff like that. Moving Pictures is more of a, lyrically wise, it's fairly even toned. The music's great. It's shorter songs. You don't have that 25-minute songs going on. I think Moving Pictures is a good introduction to Rush.
Yeah, and you've
and if you like that, then go deeper.
You've got Red Barchetta, which is a great song. Alan, Bill, if you don't know that song, you need to.
I know that.
Drive fast on the interstate and listen, but not too fast. Tom Sawyer's on that. Limelight's on that album, and then. YYZ is a fantastic guitar solo, and it's only three and a half minutes, but it's
intense.
And then there are a couple of others, so I would go with, if I had to pick one, other than the Greatest Hits, I would go.
There you go.
I would go with Moving Pictures.
Yeah,
for the same reasons as Dennis shared. Yeah, how about you, Bill? Any thoughts?
I think I need to go buy Moving Pictures. Permanent Waves
really, is a good album.
Well, I have Permanent Waves, and it's a great, and I love that record. It's a great record. And I that's one of the records I had before I sold all my records before. Then I've rebought all this shit, right? So, that's one of them. But yeah, I mean, because I've always wondered, you know, what else am I missing? So I guess I'm missing Moving Pictures. So I'll go get that. And Signals is another one too that I've always heard.
It's really good.
It's pretty good. So
it's really good.
I have to pick that up. But I want to be in that singles kind of record category, not off the road, not off the reservation stuff. So
yeah.
And I'm with Dennis. It's interesting. We think a lot alike as it relates to that. Signals, they move into that synth keyboard, and I listen to them for the more rock and roll edge to it. And so when they moved into the mid 80s, I kind of fell away, which is why, again, just jot down from Snakes and Arrows, the song Far Cry is a rock and roll song. And then the song Caravan, to Dennis, to what you said earlier,
sure.
It's like, holy cow, they're back. Cause that song,
it does. It's got that old edge to it. I mean, it's pumping. And there are songs intertwined in all those albums coming through, but are very synth driven, you know, there for many years. It's a very synth driven type band. And it's just not my thing. It's not that it's bad. Right. It's just not my thing. So cool. Awesome. All right. Well,
all right.
Rest in peace, my friend.
Yeah. God bless you, man.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug, thank you very much for coming on the show.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
It's good to have somebody that actually knows what they're talking about for a change.
actually, Dennis looked pretty good on that show. Must be one of us, Alan.
And he agrees with me.
Now, before I take us...
I can't be friends with Doug anymore, then.
Yeah, before I take us out of here, I want to share our friend Tyson Leslie, who is one of the rare hair guy down in Nashville. He shared a meme on Facebook about Neil Peart that absolutely cracked me up. And I think everybody can appreciate this, and the entire Rush family can appreciate this. I know Neil is up there somewhere knowing that all of these bands that have a gig tonight are trying to hurriedly find a Rush song they can play. Or an easy Rush song.
Yep.
And the answer is, there are none.
Well, I went to Hairbanger's Ball Saturday night, and they played, before Hairbanger's Ball came out, they played three Rush songs. So they definitely, Hairbanger's Ball didn't play three Rush songs. They played three through the PA, but they were definitely showing some respect to that. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Can I give out one more shout to you, please?
Yep.
Okay. So Tyler Warren, who has played with the Residency, we've seen him and we see him in Indianapolis sing some Kiss tunes. He actually is a percussionist for Queen also. He has done, if you go on the internet and just put his name in along with Permanent Waves, he has re-recorded the entire album of Permanent Waves. He did the vocals, the bass, the guitar, and the drums, and it has it split screen, four screens showing him playing all four things, the whole album. And it is the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life. So if you're a Rush fan, and you like that album, I know you've got it, Bill. Check that thing out and just sit and watch it. The dude is fucking incredible. I mean, it's a good tribute to Rush. So for all of them. So anyway, all right, I'm done.
All right, then y'all know what to do. Visit agesofrock.com. Check out our social media and Stitcher radio links and all of that good stuff. Till next time, peace out, folks. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.